The views expressed on the following program are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and are not necessarily those of WMEL staff, management, or advertisers.
This is Bull Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bull's Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
This is Donna Anselmo, and welcome to Bull Talk Business Radio, today's edition on February 16th. We're happy that you're listening because we've got a good show for you today and a very special guest with us. But every week on Bull Talk Business Radio, we talk about insight strategies, tips, and tools for success. And we love to give you success tips, marketing information, and book recommendations to help you succeed in your life and work, because we believe, and it's really important to us, that the people around us and the people we care about and our listeners out there enjoy and experience more success and satisfaction in their life and work. So today's guest expert is perfect for Bull Talk Business Radio and perfect for our listeners, and that is Edward G. Brown, who is the author of The Time Bandit Solution and co-founder of the top firm in culture change management, consulting, and training, which is Cohen Brown Management Group. Today, we're going to be talking with Mr. Brown about a topic that's close to my heart because it involves the fear that paralyzes people and holds them back from doing what they really want to do. So we're going to be talking about Mr. Brown's theory on courage, cowardice, and your career, and why conquering fear is an essential, and listen to this word, third space skill. So we're going to start by asking Edward G. Brown, what is a third space skill?
Well, to begin with, Donna.
Yes, it is.
Skill, it is. Nevertheless, when I say to you that courage is a learnable skill, just as you learn French, math, English, and any other academic topic, you can learn courage.
So I'm curious to know what, for our listeners, you call this a third space skill. What does third space actually mean?
It means that it's a combination of talent and skill, opportunities that have been denied some because their upper-level managers think of them as cowardly and unwilling to take risks that have to be taken because it requires entrepreneurial thought leadership.
So risk, I think, is kind of what moves you forward, because otherwise you stay with the status quo. And
Correct. And
I think that we all understand fear at some level. So why did you decide to focus on fear as a function in the workplace?
For four decades, Donna, my partner, Dr. Martin L. Cohn, MD, a psychiatrist, and I tried to fill a gap that wasn't available to the banking industry, which is converting a fear-driven, perhaps, but nevertheless service-driven culture into a proactive sales and service culture, which took courage. And for four decades, I've been writing books and training programs to help managers better understand how to obtain a charge and turn their back on fear.
So let's talk about the different types of workplace fear. What kind of fear do people encounter in the workplace? Go ahead.
You were asking. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. There are five. Currently, I believe not enough time due to open floor plan architecture and the lack of privacy in open floor plan architecture. There's literally no privacy. People sit on cubicles on top of one another rather than in offices and looking for opportunities to obtain privacy and won't have it unless the time bandits that steal up to 40 to 60% of productivity, that's 3 to 5 hours a day every day, give them some privacy to enable them to think and carry on personal calls, professional calls, and there's a solution for that. Then there's fear of rejection. One person is rejected, especially professionals that sell, it's like getting punched in the solar plexus. It's just uncomfortable as hell. And then there's fear of failure. Fear of failure is what I call, I guess what Webster also calls, atrophobia. It's the the abnormal, unwanted, and persistent fear of failure, which is an affliction, I believe, that can be controlled.
Okay, and keep going, because this is very interesting.
The next fear, strangely enough, is fear of success. Some people feel like imposters. They think they are being given accolades, and they don't deserve it. They feel as though they've been just lucky. And there's an expectation that when we're successful, that our upper-level managers and our peer group expect us to do the same thing over and over because we are capable and we are skillful, but in fact, sometimes it is a matter of luck.
So if people get to the workplace and they have not yet learned some of these skills, how do you address that? I mean, can people really learn to be less skillful if they spent less fearful if they spent a whole life in fear?
Well, let's go over with that wonderful question. A whole life of fear. Remember, when we were first humans, we faced the saber-toothed tiger for the first time, we learned fight or flight. And that gave us survival instincts. Now, in grade school, if we were unfortunate and our parents did not give us a strong self-confidence and a sense of psychological strength, we developed early scar tissue, psychological scar tissue, which we carried on into grade school. Mean teachers and peers perhaps gave us more scar tissue, psychological fear-based scar tissue. When we went on to college, it happened again. And then we took all that excess baggage, all that scar tissue that can be disposed of into our professional lives. If we don't understand this, Donna, we don't understand the cause of our fear and the effects, then we can't possibly resolve them. So we have to face the fear and before the fear goes away. FDR told us this first in the 30s, and we succeeded.
So I just want to go back, and I thank you for that explanation, Edward G. Brown. I would like to go back. You mentioned five areas of fear in the workplace. Fear of openness, the open floor plans, no privacy, and how that affects you. Fear of rejection, fear of failure, fear of success. Those are four. So what's the fifth
and
one?
And fear of the unknown, which may be the most invidious fear of all.
Right. So in other words, with fear of the unknown, you kind of know what you've got now. It might not be perfect. It might not even be good, but it's the devil you know. So when you're not sure of how change is going to impact your life at work and ostensibly your life outside of work, because there's such a close bridge between your in-house, your, you know, life and your business, it's really incumbent on you to start to deal with those fears.
God, you just said it all, Donna. You don't need me. Let's go back to what you said. What we learn outside of work, we bring to work. And in the 40s, we learned about Pearl Harbor and Hitler. If you don't think that that's fear of what was going to happen next, we didn't bring it to work, you're wrong. In the 50s, it was McCarthyism and the Red Scare. In the 60s, it was the Cuban Missile Crisis and Nikita Khrushchev banging his shoe at the UN on his desk, telling us that he was going to take his 15,000 warheads and blow us to smithereens. In the 70s, it was the Satanic Panic and the Jonestown Massacre. In the 90s, it was the Y2K crisis. Then it was 9/11 and Al-Qaeda. Today, it's ISIS.
Right. And so
we bring that to work every day.
We do. And we, there's a lot of, I think fear in itself creates and breeds a lot more uncertainty, and the further that fear snowball runs, the bigger it gets.
That's right. That's right, Donna, exactly. Look, you got to remember, everyone, the world is not such a bad place. We forget that in the last 20 years, there have been far less violent deaths than in any other time in history. The mortality rate of children has dropped fivefold. World hunger has been reduced, and may very well be eliminated in the next 5 years. Stop and think about your smartphones. Did you know that it is significantly more powerful than the computer used by NASA for moon landings? The breakthrough in cancer research is bringing us closer and closer to a vaccine than we've ever been before. In the next five years, we may have a mass marketed self-driving cars, which will make accidents a thing of the past, which in turn will revolutionize the insurance industry.
This is Donna Anselmo, and you are listening to Bold Talk Business Radio. I'm in the studio here in Cocoa, Florida, with Pete Anselmo, and we have on the line Edward G. Brown, who's a renowned consultant in culture change management. And one of the things that I love about what you're saying, Mr. Brown, is that you're putting life into perspective, and I think perspective definitely can allay fear. I know Pete Anselmo here in the studio with me has a question for you.
How are you,
please,
Mr. Brown?
Yes, sir.
I wanted to get a sense for how you deal. I know we all bring these fears with us. Are there certain techniques that you recommend in terms of walling off some of these fears, or are there methods by which you enable people to deal with, such as rejection or failure? Are there certain techniques that are applied that you found successful?
Yes, sir. But there is no silver bullet. There is no magic wand. Here's what I want everybody to consider doing. I teach this in a new program that I'm creating for the first time. It's called Let Go of Fear and Leap to Success. To let go of fear, you've got to know what it is you don't know and eliminate those knowledge deficits and do it with training. And for professional sales personnel, they've got to learn how to create an interest, overcome objections, and close deals. For the manager, he has to learn how to be a good coach and a mentor and be willing to run the risk of a painful mentee pushback, where the mentee says to the coach, "Hey, coach, I know five times as much as you know about what you're trying to coach me to do. Give me a break." Here's what you do. It's called the Off-Broadway principle. When a Broadway producer decides to go on Broadway with a show, they don't go right on Broadway to face the critics and close opening night. What they do is they go off-Broadway. They take small risks, and they get small returns. Then they start going further with their show, taking bigger risks and getting bigger returns. As the caterpillar turns into the monarch butterfly, in 11 days, if you do as I've said, you will have developed courage.
I like the concept that you're building here, which is that you take a small success and you use that small success to build your confidence, which battles your fear. Each time you have a small success, it helps, I think, to pat yourself on the back and recognize also that you have achieved something. It may not be the big picture that you want, but it's a marker on the path.
I think what's also significant...
Please, sir. What you were saying.
Yeah, what's significant is the recognition of some of these fears. I think it's important to recognize, certainly as a salesperson, that you're going to get rejected. You're not going to make every sale. So that rejection becomes part and parcel of your being. Okay, you get rejected, but let's move on. And this is the recognition of certain aspects are important before you can then move beyond them.
You got it. That's exactly right.
So, I'd just like to add here, Mr. Brown.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
One of the things that I like to remind our listeners what they're hearing about here, and we're talking about courage and courage, cowardice, and your career, and why conquering fear is an essential skill to succeed in your life and your work. One of the things I've loved that you've said so far is that you need to put your life and your fears in perspective, because very often I found that people, and tell me what you think about this, Ed Brown, do people make their fear so big that they can't get through it? Do they magnify the fear? And why do we do that, and what do we do about it?
Okay, this is such an important question. Something I personally live with. Please turn off CNN, which I call continuous negative news, every day. Don't watch it before you go to sleep, please. Don't be like me. I'm addicted. I've acculturated myself to both the Republican and the Democratic nomination, and it's frightening because they tell us every day, and CNN drills down 24/7 exaggerations into our psyche and impacts our ability to achieve good performance results and increases our fear of rejection, fear of failure. And it's back to what I said earlier about what happened in the 40s during the attack of Pearl Harbor and the Second World War and all the decades. It's back to that again. Don't subject yourself to that. Please watch movies, preferably love stories. Watch
the Hallmark Channel is my favorite. So, and I have to use that as my antidote to Fox News and CNN. So I totally get it. We need to balance.
Yes. That's all right.
Pete, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
Well, I was just saying that I think that what you do watch on television, or what you expose yourself to on a regular basis, does impact your sense of well-being and your sense of your perception of reality. It is impacted. So I think what you're recommending here is to live a life in which you can select the kinds of things that you want to be impacted by. In other words, don't allow yourself to constantly be bombarded by certain negative feelings or negative stories or negative ideas. So you have to control for yourself what is being allowed to be impacted on you. And by controlling that, you're able to deal with some of these areas that are particularly important, the kinds of things, rejection, failure, success, and the unknown. You want to quantify these ideas and not allow them to be overtaken by situations external to yourself.
Okay, so I want to ask our guest.
Yes, go ahead, please, Donna.
I want to ask you, Ed Brown, about when fear is functional, because, you know, fear also gives us a cue that maybe something is wrong. And sometimes it's that we have to shift our perspective. Sometimes it's what you said. We have to learn something new, like start with the off-Broadway before you move full on to Broadway. So there are things you have to learn along the way. But let's talk a little bit about justifiable fear in the workplace, and how does that function for people? Because in some cases, people have a real fear that they may lose their job. They have difficulty talking to their upline. They're afraid to voice their feelings, and that's where courage comes in. So let's talk a little bit about when fear is a good thing and when it's not, and what you need to do about it.
As I said earlier, my partner is a medical doctor, a psychiatrist. He uses this model, that's called the medical model, obviously, to analyze symptoms, diagnosis, and treatment plan. If what Donna said is true, then you who lack courage may do so justifiably because of knowledge deficits. If you're going to be a good sales professional, what do you have to know? You have to know how to create an interest when you talk to a prospect. You have to know how to overcome their objections and recognize that objections are not objectionable. It's a good thing if you know what to say. So practice, practice, practice. scriptwriting, and don't just hit the phone cold. Prepare for what you're going to be saying to a prospect, and anticipate objections. Right, Pete?
Absolutely.
I think professional salespeople don't just pick up the phone and say, "Give me orders, give me leads."
I agree 100%. I think one of the things that I try to tell people that are learning how to sell is that you want to engage the client, and you want to encourage questions by the client. You don't want to simply dominate the conversation so that they don't get a word in edgewise. In fact, the more questions that they have, the better off you are in terms of the ultimate solution, the ultimate closing on the sale. You want to encourage comments from your clients.
We have only a few minutes left, actually less than three. So I want to give Mr. Brown a chance to first tell our listeners who might want more information on the Courage and Cowardice program, Courage, Cowardice in Your Career, how can they reach you?
Go to ColeBrown.com, and if you want fee-free consultation for a gap analysis, Pete and I just discussed what sales professionals must know. And, like sales professionals, what managers must know. Get a gap analysis. Find out what it is you do know versus what you don't know that you must know to be successful. And then we can talk about the off-board play principle and anything else that concerns you, especially surviving the workplace privacy crisis in an open floor plan. I'd be delighted to get to know you. You got to tell me who you are, what your needs are, and then it'd be my delight to give you all the fee-free consultation you need.
Well, that's pretty awesome offer out there, Mr.
Brown.
If
you all would like to hear more from me, on March 15th, I'm doing a fee-free webinar, and the topic is Surviving the Workplace Privacy Crisis in an Open Floor Plan. So I'd be delighted to hear from you, or see you then, or see you before.
Okay, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to commit to advertising that webinar on our webpage as well. I think it's
terrific.
A great, you know, we'll put it out on our Facebook because it is kind of daunting. I know years ago I went from working in a university setting where I was director of publications and I had my own office and a window and a lot of privacy. And then I went to work at Olston Staffing Services, which was merged with Adecco. And suddenly I was in a cubicle. And it was a nice cubicle. It was upholstered and it was, you know, higher than many of the cubicles are. But it was a totally different work environment, and it was a little bit daunting because it opened you up to everybody else's eyes, and that can be disconcerting. So I want our listeners to come back and check out that March 15th webinar. Listen to us at AM 1060 WMEL, and in the second half of our show, I'm going to tell you how and where to look for more information on that webinar about openness and privacy. You're going to go to CohenBrown.com, and you can call us in the next half of the show if you would like at 321-241-1060. Mr. Edward Brown, thanks for being with us today.
This is Bull Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bull's Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
This is Donna Anselmo. Thank you for hanging with us into the second segment of Bold Talk Business Radio. Perhaps you just tuned in after the news. And in our last segment, we were talking with Edward G. Brown about fear in the workplace and the concept of courage, cowardice, and your career. And we talked a little bit about some of the things that you need to do to shift from fear into courage. And one of the things you can do is to put your life into perspective, put the situation into perspective, figure out what's in your control, what's out of your control, and target the part that's in your control. And remember that the best way to be fearless in the workplace is to stay in learning mode. If a situation happens that isn't working for you, that you're feeling stressed by, and you get that physical cue in your body. You're either tight in your throat or your back starts to hurt or you've got a pit in your stomach. Notice that you are having a fear reaction. And then ask yourself, whoa, if I don't like this feeling, what can I do instead? What feeling do I want to replace fear with? Well, I want to replace it with comfort. I want to replace it with courage. So then you have to say, well, what's one thing I can do? What can I learn today? How can I feel differently in the moment? And change that. And sometimes you're caught like a deer in the headlights. And so you have to be able to step out of that moment. And physically, my recommendation to you, if somebody does or says something that triggers fear in you, move your body. Just take a step to the left or a step to the right and actually shift physically. And as you're doing that, give yourself some time to think about how you want to respond and what information you need. And sometimes you can just ask for information. You can ask the question, what has to happen differently here for us to get to another place?
Well, that's a really good prescription. I think what's important is that people in business recognize that there are many circumstances that can create fear. And oftentimes, especially in the selling situation, you have rejection, you have failure, you have difficulties in terms of answering questions that a customer might be asking you. So all of these are potential areas that will elicit fear within you. And the important thing for you to do is to recognize within yourself that these are areas that you need to work on. And all of them are areas that you can overcome. And it's not any great monumental project to overcome these areas, but it is something that requires that you first recognize it, recognize the physical symptoms within yourself, because these are symptoms that even though you think they're just within yourself, you will be projecting the sense onto the relationship, onto the circumstance. So these are circumstances that need to be dealt with to improve your enjoyment of business and the enjoyment of your success. So these are things that you need to work on.
So the opposite of fear is courage. Courage gives you that momentum and motion and motivation to be able to move forward in the moment. And a lot of times I think courage comes from self-love. It comes from the confidence that you have in yourself, your loving acceptance of yourself, and your willingness to move forward. And on that note, I'm going to transition this show to a different topic, which is in line with the fact that we had Valentine's Day this week, and I'm sitting with my Valentine across from me in the studio today. I want to talk about how you show love to your customers, because Bold Talk Business Radio is the show where we deliver insight, strategies, tips, and tools for success every week. And it's really important in business to make sure that your customers know how very much you appreciate them, because at the end of the day, you are only in business because of your customers. If you don't have a customer and your customer doesn't love you, they turn away the next day. Oops, we just struck fear into the conversation. So we want to go back to the love place.
What are some of the ways you do that with your customers?
Well, one of the ways I think that you can start is to acknowledge your customers. First thing you can do is thank them for their business. So when somebody agrees to hire you, or you sign a contract with a new company, they're going to be bringing you onto their team, or even if they're buying your product, you may be a retail store owner. Somebody comes into your store, you don't want to never see them again. So ask them to have a guest book so that you can recognize them. If they've come to your store for the first time, maybe you want to send them a postcard or a coupon to come back and begin building that relationship. And you build a relationship with people when they feel validated by you and when they feel recognized by you. So start out with the concept that you are always going to appreciate and thank your customer. I mean, I know I go into stores and, of course, the clerk says thank you at the end of a transaction. But there are ways to keep the thank you going. For instance, if you've been in business for a while and you've been in relationship with a customer for some time, whether it's 1 month, 6 months, or a year from now, or from when you first started doing business with them, send them an anniversary card, send them a thank you card, thanking them for the trust that they've placed in you. And it always makes a difference in a relationship when people feel validated. So show them the appreciation, and remember that thanking somebody is an acknowledgement that you're actually in a relationship with them.
Well, I think that's extremely important, and very important for businesses that deal with residential customers, that to continue that relationship. It's not a question very often of just coming in and doing a single project for a customer. That is the potential customer for many, many years and for many, many different projects. So it's important to maintain communication with that customer. And you have some other ways with cards and different ideas that you can...
It's another thing to remember, is that before I get on to some of the other ways that we can connect with our clients, it's just so important to remember that the customer doesn't exist in a vacuum. They exist in a sea of other customers. They have other contacts for you. They work with other people. They know other people in the community. They know other people who have a need or an interest in your product. So the deeper relationship you build with your customer, obviously, the more likely they're going to be to refer you the next piece of business or the next sale in your office. So to answer your question, Pete, about some of the ways that you can thank your customer, stay in love with your customer, and keep your customer in love with you, is to send them, I mentioned a card before, a thank you note, an acknowledgement, but you can also just make a phone call and let them know that you're thinking of them. You can schedule a personal meeting with them just to come in and see how things are going. Sometimes you sell, I've got my friend Jen Snelson, who's in my networking group. She sells copiers. Hey, Jen. But let me tell you, Jen has to go in periodically and make sure those copiers are working. Show her face, bring some donuts into the office, and let people know, let her customers know that she's there. It's not just about selling the document copier, but it's about going the distance to let the customer know that you're the person behind that. Last night, I had dinner with a client that I did some business with a while ago. And curiously, the client contacted me and said, hey, how about if we have lunch? And she just wanted to have lunch. It wasn't about a piece of business. It had nothing to do with anything she particularly needed. But she did need to have that conversation. And so I went, instead of doing lunch, we did dinner, and we had a very nice dinner last night. And you can certainly call and take a client to lunch or send them tickets to an event. One of the other things I really like to do is if I see something in the news that's of interest to a client, if I'm on the computer and I've read it on the computer, I send the link to that article to my customer and I say, hey, I just read this piece and I thought you might find it of interest.
You brought up the internet, and I'm curious. Let's talk a little bit about how you can set to know your customers over the internet. What do you do over the internet to help contact your customers?
Well, I think that there are some... number one, you can stay in contact with them where you're generating the outflow of information. So you can obviously use email. You can use, there are electronic tools that you can use to stay in touch with your customers, such as an e-blast. And I am really surprised sometimes when I say, well, we'll do an e-blast or an e-campaign, and people don't really know what I'm talking about. So I'm going to explain that right now.
Good.
And I'm sure that you have, if you're on email out there, you have received from somebody an email that's very colorful and it has pictures in it and it's a newsletter, basic newsletter format. So that's an e-electronic, e-newsletter. But then we also have the ability to get that out to a lot of people. And the way that you get that out is you use a service like Constant Contact or MailChimp, and they have what's called an e-blast technology to be able to blast it out to a lot of people at once. But here's the thing that you have to be aware of. You can't just send thousands of emails out, because then you're spamming people, and that's not good for your customers.
No.
They don't like that. And they don't like you to stay in touch too often. So you have to kind of build the right balance with people. But you want to use a service that is going to ensure that your email doesn't get blackballed and blacklisted by your customers. And to do that, you have to make sure that those e-campaigns, those electronic mailing campaigns that you're using, are permission-based. You're asking people to opt into your list, to say to you and to say to the email company that is sending it out on your behalf, yes, we want this information. Because if you don't give them an opportunity to opt in or opt out, you are going to get caught in the spam laws. But one of the things that I do like to do is I have a subscription to JackieLawsonCards.com, JackieLawson.com, and that's JACQUIE. Lawson, LAWSON.com. And I really like it because she produces animated cards, and you can go right on that website. You can get, I'm sure you can do a sample card for free, or you can have a very inexpensive subscription. It's probably $12 or $15 a year to send out as many cards as you want. So I love that, the beautiful animated cards, and my friends and customers and family like to get those too. Another great service for staying in touch with your customers is sendoutcards.com. And you can look them up online. And with sendout cards, which is kind of neat, you can build your own greeting card. You can customize it. You can put your complete imagery, your own message. You can put your logo on the back of the card, or you can use one of their stock cards. By the way, if you have a question on how to show your customers the love, which is what we're going to be talking about for the next 10 minutes still on Bold Talk Business Radio, you can dial our station. You can call us at 321-241-1060. So think about how you can acknowledge your customers. And when you do that, make sure you use their name, because people really like their name. They like to, I don't know what it is.
They like to hear their name.
We do. We do. Even my little dogs. I mean, they learn their name, Kaylee and Carter, two little Bolognese. But if you use their names, they know not only their name, but they know the other one's name. And I find that amazing.
Absolutely. How else can you appreciate customers? Are there other avenues that you can appreciate a customer?
Sure. I'm thinking back to my friend Stephanie Leibowitz, who I used to work with in New York, and we shared a company together called mm-hmm. Proposal Docs, where we helped other companies write business-to-business sales proposals, and we still do that under the auspices of Bold Marketing Solutions. But one of the things that Stephanie liked to talk about was giving somebody a virtual hug. So what does that mean, especially in this day of...
Got to watch that.
Watch the sexual harassment claims, right? You can give somebody a virtual hug, which means just giving them a hug because you recognize them and you knew their name. When Stephanie and I worked for Alston Staffing before we both went into the consulting sector individually, Stuart Alston, who was the CEO of that company, knew everybody's name and job. Now, we had, just in corporate office alone, we had over 350 people there. But that man could walk by anybody in the cafeteria or walk by any one of those open cubicles we discussed in the first segment of the show, and he knew who you were and what you were doing. So when Stuart came by and said, "Hey, Donna, how's it going today?" or "Thank you for that piece you sent up to my office," or "Good job today," or just "Hello, Donna," it made a difference. Like, I felt so recognized by the CEO of that company. So it's the same thing, because we have to recognize that showing our customers the love doesn't only happen with the customer. It happens because we love, we're passionate about our business, we're passionate about our own company, we're passionate about our own employees, and we treat our employees the same way that we want to treat our customers and the same way that we want to be treated ourselves. So remember to talk to your customer, to your employees and to your customers. Use their names, recognize them, make them feel like they're more than a blank wall that you just kind of pass, and make your customers remember that you know them, and that just because they signed the contract with you or wrote the check to you or saw you last week, don't let them think that you've ever forgotten them.
Well,
so even though
really
it's not a physical actual hug, and you can, there are some, I have clients I hug because they're huggers. And I'm a hugger, so sometimes my clients are just getting used to that. But you just really want to hug people emotionally, and that can happen by just simply recognizing that they exist and they're doing a good job and they're important to you.
That's really good advice, and it's a wonderful approach to business for owners and top-level executives to understand and appreciate their employees. I think what the concept there is that we're all salespeople, ultimately, that everybody contributes to the functioning and the success of the business, and so that we all must realize within ourselves that what we do is important, and the fact that a CEO or some executive can come by and say, hi, Donna, how are you? Nice to see you, and I enjoyed that work that you did. That's very important.
What's really important about that, Pete, is that it creates inside the organization a brand ambassador, somebody who loves the company because you love them because the company loves them. And when people feel valued and validated in the workplace, they are going to do the ultimate thing to love the customer, which is deliver excellent customer service, because they become committed to the brand because you've recognized them. They feel an ownership of the relationship with you, and it motivates them to do a better job at work. You had asked me a few moments ago about how you can get to know your customers over the internet, and it's a very different animal, and we're all doing business over the internet now, or so many of us are, that you're doing business at a distance. So it is important to stay in touch with people. But if you look at some of the ways that the internet has opened us up to knowing our customers better through technology, Amazon being a great example, or I'm going to bring up my client's website, spaceshirts.com, you can look at a website and see, well, somebody who bought this also bought that. Somebody who looked at this also looked at that. If you were here before, they're going to show you the images of things that you've looked at in the past. And so that is a way of a website of technology reconnecting with the client. In some ways, I think that's a little scary because the fact that I go online and I'm constantly marketed
it's
to
incredible.
And remarketed.
Absolutely incredible.
It's called remarketing because you're putting back in front of people things that they looked at, maybe didn't buy. And so you're just kind of pushing them, you know, along the buying curve again by reminding them. And I know if you go on Facebook, for instance, you're going to see in the sidebar of Facebook all the ads you clicked on in other places. And while it can be disconcerting in a way, somebody is saying, we know what you're doing out there. Mm-hmm. And we're serving it up to you. So you can take it as it's a service to you, or you can take it as Big Brother is watching.
Yeah, it's definitely a double-edged sword.
Yeah, it's definitely a double-edged sword. But it's important to know that you have an objective, and the objective is to stay in touch and to know your customers. And so the big companies are definitely doing that. So another thing that you can do to love your customers on the internet or in person is to provide them with advance notice of sales or give them a coupon or a discount. Think about your American Express account. American Express is great. They have relationships with Ticketmaster and other organizations. So when a concert comes up, a big name concert, I think Rod Stewart years ago, we got notified, I think it was from American Express, that they were going to be starting the sale of those tickets. So we were able to use our American Express card in order to get in front of that ticket line. And so that was kind of cool. I know a friend of mine, Brenda Mulberry at Space Shirts, who I mentioned earlier, a couple of years ago, even though we're both based here in Florida, Brenda's store is in Merritt Island. I'm here in Melbourne. You're here in Melbourne, Pete. But we all went to New York together, and she used her Chase card to buy her tickets because Chase sent her something about the Christmas spectacular at Radio City Music Hall. So we all ended up there. So I want to tell you quickly that what some of the stores do is they develop the Rapid Rewards program like Southwest has. Make people know that you care about them by giving them something back. JCPenney's, Macy's, The Gap, they all have friends and families days to make you feel like a preferred customer. And so the more that you stay in touch with your customers, give them a card in the mail, give them a coupon or a discount or an opportunity for a new service, the more connected they are going to feel with you because you remembered them.
I wanted to ask one more question. You had mentioned about the CEO of Alston Staffing. How do you get access to top company management? That's a tough nut for a lot of people.
Sure, and we're probably going to save that for a lengthier discussion on another segment of Bold Talk Business Radio because we have less than a minute and a half left. But I will tell you that there are some companies that make it a point to let their customers know that they can engage with top management. We worked several years back with a security company, and it was a $60 million company, and they were very busy. They had, 2,500 employees across the country. But they let their customers know that if there was ever an issue, a question, a concern, that they could speak directly to the president of the firm. And that knowledge that they could have access to top management was a great way for customers to feel vested with that company and to feel like the top manager cared enough, the owner of the $60 million company is going to stop today and call me back.
Well, that certainly can be applied even to small companies.
Yeah. So come back next week on Bold Talk Business Radio. We're going to be talking with attorney Alex Solomita about protecting your assets. He's a bankruptcy attorney, but he also does general legal services and immigration law. We've got some interesting topics for you next week. Come back to Bold Talk Business Radio and visit us on the archive. You can listen to past shows or get a recording of today's show at the Bold Talk Archive on 1060WMEL.com. Come back next week.